Thank you, Steve. Dr. John Duffy is here for his semi-regular visit. Clinical psychologist, author of The Available Parent, and podcaster, Undue Anxiety, which you can find on iTunes, on his website, drjohnduffy.com, and also on WGN+. So you told me some information in the green room before we came on.
Right.
That we would like to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. So years ago, there was a young girl in our neighborhood, not far from where Wendy and I lived, that was murdered in a very grisly way with a knife in her home. And about 2 weeks ago or so, there was a report of another similar incident. And just moments ago, I saw a story that said that the police felt like there was nothing to this incident, that it did not happen.
And we're talking about Kelly Joy O'Loughlin.
Correct.
A lot of people heard that story. And now reports last week, this according to CBS, of a home invasion and knife attack on a West Suburban teen girl, prompting police to swarm an Indian Head Park neighborhood, were unfounded, police announced today. Last Wednesday, it has been determined, that the reported home invasion was not a bona fide incident, according to police. Last Wednesday, police said they received a call of a home invasion, 6:45 p.m. from a home on these particular streets. A girl told them an intruder wearing a mask confronted her, cut her on the right arm with a knife. The man supposedly fled. Indian Head Park police on Tuesday thanked residents for, quote, their input, concern, and understanding. The incident is now classified as cleared slash closed, according to police.
Correct. So one might wonder, you know, like, why would any child go through this and put a community through this and things like that? And the answer, in my experience, is inevitably a belief that they don't bring enough to the table. So they need to kind of create a persona that's sympathetic, that other people are going to kind of reach out to them and, you know, and they'll be kind of well known, even if it's just for a brief period of time. I was telling Bill a moment ago, I worked with a girl years ago who claimed that her daughter was killed, or her father was killed in the 9/11 incident. And he wasn't. He was fine.
He was still alive. It's not like even he died somewhere and she just...
Nope. And she got 2 days where she felt special.
Sure.
And important and cared about.
Do you know, there's a documentary and the title is The Woman Who Wasn't There. And it's about a woman who, for years, made public appearances talking about what it was like to be at the Twin Towers that day. And she wasn't there.
Right.
It was totally fabricated.
Right.
Part of it was to get attention. Part of it was there was a speaking fee when she'd go somewhere and tell her story about
9/11.
But you have to realize if you're flat out lying or giving an alternate truth, alternate fact, that right. At some point, if it catches up to you, your credibility is shot forever, isn't it? Can you ever rebound from something like that?
This girl I worked with years ago, she carried a stigma for years and years and years that she's just a liar and an egregious liar and a dangerous liar. And really deep down, all she wanted was to feel important and like she belonged. But it's really, really hard to shake that image, I think, once you carry it, you know.
Yeah.
And yet I think it becomes habitual with a lot of, not just young people, but older people too. I'm working with a couple of adults who kind of find themselves habitually lying about things of no import, not like what we're talking about now, but things like where they're like, I don't know why I told my wife I stayed at work late. I didn't. And, you know, I just drove around. But it just becomes this habit. And underneath it, I find, is always this belief like, I don't bring enough to the table. I'm really not good enough. So I'm going to have to fabricate something that makes a little more sense and feels a little better as a story to tell.
When you, I don't know if solving it is the right word, but when you confront them with that and say, how about this? Couldn't it be that? Do they usually recognize that? Or do they say, oh, no, that has nothing to do with it?
Typically, there is enormous resistance. There's a real attachment to lies, especially big ones, because yeah. This becomes the identity, you know what I mean? And the real identity isn't good enough, so you want to hold on to the false identity, you know? So I run into this an awful lot. And, you know, the luxury of a therapy room is you can give somebody permission to let that go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what? This is your one opportunity. Let it go. Let the truth out. And then we can start fresh. you know, and create the identity that you need, that you want to be.
Yeah.
How does that poor child or adult or individual make amends with everyone else, though? It's okay in therapy to talk about it and have this fresh start, but it seems nearly impossible for that to happen in real life.
Nearly impossible. And you almost have to take people one by one and explain to them, you know, like, this is what this was about. It's a wildly humbling experience that most of us never ever go through, but I've worked with a number of kids, and we've worked through that question, and you know, and a Facebook status doesn't do it, and a tweet doesn't do it. It has to be personal and apologetic, you know, and explanatory to some extent.
John, can you reason with a child and say, just by doing this, by virtue of doing this and lying so blatantly about something, not only are you setting yourself up as untrustable, but it also waters down somebody who's maybe did have a relative in 9/11, or if there's somebody going around saying, yeah, I've got cancer, isn't that terrible? What that does is it waters down people who are really suffering through anything like that.
Yeah, and this isn't always a consideration of kids who are doing this. Their primary consideration is, this is an opportunity for me to build myself up, you know? So they have to be reminded, you know, like, this has legs. This doesn't just stay with you, you know? So the incident we're talking about today, the 9/11 incident, the incident you're talking about, Bill, all of them have legs and risks affiliated with them. So I have to remind these kids, you know, like, yeah, you can't just do this. This isn't a victimless thing to do, so you've got to come clean.
Yeah.
You know, it's important.
Does this fall under that Munchausen by proxy syndrome where these are parents who say, you know, oh, my child has cancer. They exaggerate an illness and they do this like throughout their lives.
This is one of the most unusual, bizarre psychiatric disorders. But this is a real phenomenon where, yeah, and it's usually moms, but sometimes dads who will create illness in their kids so that they're heroes in the emergency room. It's a lot like that, the same thing. You know, you can imagine that the story's the same. My self-worth isn't good enough. I don't feel good enough about myself, but I can create a circumstance in which I'm a hero.
How do you, as a therapist or as a parent that might be listening right now, try to handle this? Like, for instance, this young girl in Indiana Head Park who said someone, masked man, came in her house and cut her with a knife. As a parent, you have to believe them.
Sure.
But is there some way to say, okay, now let's run through these details again. I'm sorry that this happened to you, but it's important you tell me exactly what happened. I mean, how do you, as a parent, deal with this to make sure it's true?
It's almost a two-step process. First, you kind of get them to the point where they can admit that this isn't true in as safe an environment as you can provide and as non-damning an environment in the immediate run as you can provide. And then on the back end, as kind of damage control, you want your kid to know, you know, you do have everything you need to be successful. You don't need this kind of lie in order to be a whole person. And you really got to bolster that and create little wins for them going forward, because these are messages to parents that, like, you know, well, okay, my child is clearly suffering something in terms of their self-esteem and they need some kind of help. So you don't want to overshame them. You also don't want to minimize that this is risky, that this you can't continue to do this. This can't happen again.
But how do you even believe them? Like this kid who said, Mom, this is what happened. As a parent, you call the police and you say, oh, my God, my daughter was attacked in our own house.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to call the police. And then how do you figure it all out?
In my experience, most police departments have community policing. And they're trained to some extent in psychology, and they often know exactly what the deal is walking in the door, or very quickly. Yeah. And so they often handle the, you know, like, well, boy, the story really doesn't add up here, you know, so tell me again. And they can gingerly kind of walk that child through without overly shaming him or her, so that the parents are kind of free to do the cleanup work on the back end. But it's often the policing that gets the child to admit the truth.
Wow. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. If you want to jump in on this conversation, easy to do, 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. It's Bill and Wendy along with Dr. John Duffy on WGN.
We're chatting with Dr. John Duffy. He is a clinical psychologist. You can read his book, The Available Parent, and you can go to his website at drjohnduffy.com. There you will find his podcast as well as on WGN Plus. It's called Undue Anxiety. When John came in, you had mentioned that some breaking news happened.
Right.
Reports last week of a home invasion and knife attack on a West Suburban teen girl in Indian Head Park. Police have announced today were unfounded. They have now deemed the case closed or cleared. We were talking a little about it. Are there some warning signs? Because we were talking off the air a little bit. Every kid is different, and maybe there are some kids that achieve greatness more so than another kid in a family. And living in a shadow of someone can think, oh, I need to get more attention. Are there some signs we can look for? And we parent kids, different kids need different parents, kind of, don't they?
Definitely, definitely. One important thing that we were talking about is you can't parent any two kids the same. A generation ago, I think our parents would have said, well, no, there's an iron fist.
This is how we do it.
And we discipline and we do it, and it's consistent across the board. And that can still be the case. But in terms of the kind of the gentler TLC part of parenting, I think we have to recognize that some kids are exceptionally talented at a really early age and need very little parenting. You can be very hands-off. Some kids need to hear what's great about them. They need to hear that they bring everything they need to bring to the table because they don't know it, you know? And some kids are just kind of like inherently born with either talent or confidence, and they don't need a whole lot of that.
Right.
So as parents, big part of our job is to be aware of the sensibilities of our kids and the needs of our kids and checking in with them pretty frequently, especially if our children are withdrawn. Like if they're super quiet, you know, you don't need to have an hour-long conversation with them. Most of us will never have that with our kids, or if we get them in the car for an hour, we might get that on occasion. But just a moment, just checking in, you know, hey, are you good? You know, you're awesome. And this is your thing, or this is what I picture for you. Or, you know, you're one of the kindest kids I know, even if it's something esoteric like that, that can carry them a long, long ways. But if they don't know that they carry strengths, then stuff like this can happen where they manufacture something, you know? And if you can imagine in the head of that child, they don't feel better about themselves. They feel worse, you know, because they're keenly aware I'm making this up. And so, you know, what I bring to the table really isn't sufficient.
Since we're talking about kids needing attention, I'm going to warn you right now, this is a most unpleasant story, but there's a trend developing right now. It just happened again in Florida. A 14-year-old girl who killed herself, which is tragic enough, but felt the need to do it online, to have it live streamed while she did it. I read a story about a girl a couple of weeks ago who did this same thing, and it's happening more and more often.
It is.
So what's behind this? I mean, I guess the obvious is, again, it's a cry for attention, but the end result is these kids don't live to see the attention. So
no.
What are they gaining out of this?
Right. There's the fallacy of it is, you know, you don't live to see the attention. But when I work with a kid who is acutely suicidal and really thinking about taking his or her life, that's the thing they want to know is, like, who's going to show up for me? Who's going to care? Next week, a year from now, will there be ribbons around the trees? Will nobody care? You know, and a lot of these kids firmly believe, even my parents, they're not going to care. They're going to move on. They'll be fine. And, you know, and it often takes kind of this army of family members and friends to let them know, no, we really do value you and we really do care about you. And this, right, this online Facebook Live suicide stuff, which is happening lately, is incredibly disturbing. But it's kind of just the absurd end of what kids have been doing for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this ability for more people to be kind of exposed and in their minds to kind of ignore them, you know, and that's the fear, and that's what they're trolling for is, you know, will anybody care? And you're right. It, you know, when you become suicidal, you lose your compass of reason to a great extent, you know, and you really think, like, you know, I'm going to have some view into, you know, who shows up. And if there's a line around the block, I'll feel good about that, you know, not recognizing how permanent the solution is. Right?
This is a tough question for you to answer. But do you, like with this poor 14-year-old girl, do you feel like at the very last second, maybe she's like, I don't want to go through with this, like the thought going through their head at the last second, but it's too late?
You know, when you sit across from a teenager who is suicidal, the first thing you recognize is this kid doesn't want to die. You know, this kid wants to be attended to. This kid wants to be cared for and know that they're valued. That's the main thing. And they want to value themselves. And just the depressive pain and the weight of that is what draws them toward a suicidal gesture. So yeah, I can imagine. There was a young man in my hometown years ago who attempted suicide, turning the car on in the garage, and his body was found outside the garage, meaning
he tried to get out.
Yeah. Exactly.
How is this either the same or different from all the stories we've heard about people who sadly, you know, will go in and shoot up a school or a theater or a park? And they say to themselves, I've never really gotten much attention, but with this, I'm going out in a blaze of glory. People will remember me. Is it the same kind of thought process for somebody who's killing themselves online?
So much so, Bill. You know, that idea that people will remember me, right? You know, that somehow I'll be etched in granite after this moment, and I'll be important, even if it's infamously important.
Yeah.
You know, when you get desperate, you'll take that, you know? So absolutely. I think some of the same themes play out in all of these episodes where it's like, you know, this need to feel like they belong, like they're important and they carry some worth, even if it's entirely negative, you know?
I get angry when we talk about something like this, where we try to make our kids feel like they're worthy and they do bring something to the table. There are always people that are like, oh, toughen up. You're the parent. You know, if a kid does go and shoot up a school, it's the parent's fault.
Right.
I can't help but feel sorry for the parent of that child that is shocked. There's the Slender Man documentary that's on, I believe, HBO now. And I'm heartbroken for the parents because in a million years, they never thought they'd be sitting there going, my daughter did this.
Right. No, and there's also this kind of almost this group effect, right? So there was more than one kid involved in the Slender Man thing. If you think about Columbine, you know, I saw an interview with Sue Klebold, who is Dylan Klebold's mother. And it's just heartbreaking because you can tell this is a lovely woman and a good mother, but somehow the combination of these two guys was incendiary, and she will forever just kind of wonder whether she missed something critical. I don't think it's reasonable to blame parents. I think most of us as parents, the vast, vast majority of us, are doing our best. I've yet to meet the parent that meant ill will or for their child to do something terrible. Hasn't happened, you know?
Love your kids. That's all you can do, and try your best. I mean, no one's perfect, and the people who criticize others are certainly not perfect either.
Amen.
Thanks, John, so much.
Thank you, guys.
John Duffy. Again, the book is The Available Parent, and listen to his podcasts. They're fantastic.
It's awesome.
We appreciate you being here. We'll take a quick break, and then some news, and then more. Show Bill and Wendy WGN.